Thank you very, very much. That's very, very moving. They've asked me just to, if people want to do questions and discussion, I'd be pleased to stand here and play with you all night. This is really, this is where my heart is. So I guess they'd like you to come to the microphone. Please.
Do I think the dollar will collapse? I think the dollar is in decay. I suspect it won't collapse. I think they'll hold it together, but I think it's in decay.
Economy is going. And so it occurred to me, because he said, because we have a plan, we know we're prepared to buy up these industries that have failed. So if we make a plan, as we're making now about co-ops buying, employee buying, it seems to me that if we had some legislation, either statewide or federal legislation, that gives priority to employee ownership, that might give us a leg up in case this imminent failure does occur. I'm not an economist, but I would like to hear you say, yeah, that's where we need to go.
Well, no, they will certainly try to do that, the banks will try to do that. And that's what's interesting about the federal system, the states. You can, state by state by state, you can actually begin to do what you said, either priority for co-op or worker-owned buyouts, one way or another. There's the legislation, complicated story, but the legislation now available heavily subsidized takeovers of companies by workers. It's very odd. It was passed by a maverick conservative and very radical Senate chairman at one point, Huey Long's son, but it actually provides for socializing workforces. Including co-ops. Just so those of you retiring businessmen can sell their companies to their workers and get a tax benefit. The baby boom is retiring. A couple million businesses are available for worker ownership, and there's a big tax subsidy. So that's an opportunity right now. And it's the sort of thing that can be taken advantage of. People haven't quite risen to that opportunity yet. But yes, there are things to do in this odd decentralized system we have that some states you can do it. I sometimes think of it like a checkerboard. That the black squares and the red squares. There's some states you can't do a damn thing, at least right now. But some states you can really move, and as the other states begin to fail, you have examples to show what you can do, and that possibility, I think, is very American as well. Sir.
Sir, thank you so much for what you shared. I've been struggling to put it in words like that, but of course I haven't been able to, but I'm struggling with that the system is not working and how to address it. I'm an environmentalist from Texas, one of the worst states. So it's constant war down there.
Right.
And also I'm a climate activist. And so I'd like to get your thoughts. I mean, you presented a very hopeful, but also realistic vision. I mean, it's not like a rainbow and it's going to be a lot of work and a lot of sacrifice, but at times, when I look at where we're going with regard to climate change and global warming, and then the issue of Fukushima and the catastrophe that is unfolding, I just would like to have your thoughts on what you see, hopeful signs, or just what you see is happening that's changing around the issue of climate and environmentalism.
The climate change, and you might add to climate change environmentalism also unlimited growth against resource constraints globally. I see in that, in all three of those areas, the conditions getting worse before they get better. But I also see rising consciousness. In fact, that's what's really interesting. We're having a long discussion about it today. Young people get that faster than they get any other issue except school loans, the loans. They understand something's really wrong. And the interesting thing about that, when you actually push on it, I have a friend who talks about environmentalism light, and or system change light, L-I-T-E, or system change real. The current model of attempting in the United States and elsewhere of attempting to deal with global warming is to regulate somehow the output, either taxing or regulating or using one form or another of, you know, cap and trade. And it isn't working anywhere. The European system's failing. I write about this in my book. The old conservative economists at the University of Chicago, Milton Friedman's teachers, this is really wonderful because they were onto this. These guys wanted a free market, small business economy. They hated the large corporations who were rigging the economy against the free market. So they were on the other side of it. And they said, you can't regulate these guys. One of them got a Nobel Prize for showing that they capture the regulators, which is what happens all over the world. So they said, in the interest of a free market, and if you break them up, they'll regroup. The big fish will eat the little fish, will be back at the same place. These guys, Milton Friedman's teacher, said, the only way you can do it is socialize them. Because you can't regulate them. And I think we're going to come to that, that some of these animals cannot be regulated. And that's, I think, going to happen in the banking system as well. Every expert I know, left, right, and center, predicts another banking crisis. And then at that point, the anger will come up. We'll probably break them up at some point. That's what Sherrod Brown wants to do. And then the big fish will eat the little fish and we'll be back at the trough again. And at some point, the anger, I think, is going to lead. There's only one answer, make them into public utilities. And we're going to hear that from, I think, Ellen. Go to Ellen Brown's discussion, because she really knows that. But I think that answer also applies in the environmental area. I'm not suggesting an easy path. I am suggesting that the logic is forcing people to these kinds of questions. Sir.
Dwayne Block from Conowoc. Work with the Milwaukee Democratic Party and the Waukesha Democratic Party. Been studying the book, The Fourth Turning, for the last three months. Just finished reading it for the second time. Lots of very complimentary information to what you just talked about. The key thing, there's theories of cyclical history. Four generations to a cycle. The fourth cycle is always a crisis. The fourth cycle is always a major war. And within the next 5-6 years, this is very top-notch research. We're looking at a major war with the potential of nuclear weapons. You mentioned violence. The cyclical history you're talking about transformations. This has been happening every century. The key to their research, to say, to the transformation is the violence. And so the question for you is, I'm not sure, I think it's so important. We're starting a study group on this book in Waukesha, Milwaukee.
I haven't read that book yet, so I look forward to reading it, sir.
So The Fourth Turning, and I'm T-U-R-N-I-N-G. So I'd recommend it if any of you are interested in reading it and participating in our Eastern Wisconsin study group on the book, let me know. My email is deblock65@yahoo.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I had not heard before that really remarkable statistic you gave about the reduction in military spending in the United States. Does that take into account the incredible shift to the private sector of so much of what the military historically has done?
Yes, it does. It certainly, that's the actual Defense Department budget.
Have they been able to hide some of the privatization of it by putting it somewhere else in the budget?
No, it is just a very big economy, and the share is going down, partly because the conservatives are demanding it as well. I'm not saying it's over. It's a very big military. But I'm saying that if you look at the long trend, it is declining as a share of the economy. One of the results is it can't boost the economic system anymore. You don't get Keynesian effects either. I'm not saying it's over, but I'm saying the trend actually is against more and more, in my view, excursions into Iraq. Now, I think the reason we're doing the drones is because that's the only option they can see politically. I mean, it's a horrible option, but there is this other broader historical perspective. That's probably, we'll see, that's a controversial statement, but I think it's accurate.
Well, the reduction sounds like good news to me.
It's still very big. We've got more work to do. It's big in absolute terms, but as a share, it's going down.
Hi. Madison's also the home to the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which I'm not affiliated with, but I know it's an organization that...
Freedom of what?
Freedom From Religion.
Uh-huh.
It tries to basically turn America actually secular, because we have, you know, in God we trust on our currency. We have on one nation under God on our Pledge of Allegiance. Do you think that perhaps there are issues such as, you know, people sometimes are willing to cling to their Bible more than they're willing to cling to their wallet, like their economic independence? Do you think that's one area that is almost unpredictable in terms of overcoming sometimes ignorant?
It is unpredictable. I mean, that's actually the right word. I mean, look at this new pope. All of a sudden, we've got the Catholic Church headed by a very progressive economically, and it's not as progressive as I'd like to see. So I don't know which way that's going to move. There's a very different history of religion that isn't conservative as well.
I guess in another way is women's rights, particularly, or LGBT rights in this country.
Terrible.
Do you think that that's only going to make? Do you think that it's only going to make the cause tough, like the changing the system more difficult, and it's debatable, or do you think people will continue to stick with their religion and let that people manipulate it?
Yeah, I just don't have an answer to that. I think we're going to see how that plays out. I don't feel like I have any special knowledge.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. I appreciate it. It's been great to hear what you have to say. I think I really appreciate, especially the part about the first step is admitting you have a problem, and I think you're doing that very well. Then I wanted to mention the North American Students of Cooperation. The NASCO Institute is a phenomenal organization, and that Madison is very proud to have the highest per capita population of co-op members of any city in the United States.
Here, here, here.
There are many independent co-op houses I'm talking about. I'm talking about housing. Our MCC is housing is a human right, of course. It's housing for people, not for profit. And so I guess you're definitely following in the steps of people like W.E.B. Du Bois. Not joking. So my question is, it's my birthday this Friday. Who will buy me a copy of this man's book?
Happy birthday. I will.
I also wanted to speak to you about the statistics you talked about the GDP and military spending as a percentage reducing. I really think that is the kind of language that the CBO uses to mask the grotesque amount of money that we're spending on the military. I interrupted the super committee when the chief of the CBO was using this mumbo jumbo about, oh, it's the percentage of a GDP and it's really, But what's really relevant to us as an American people is the percentage of our tax money that's being spent on the military when it could be spent on the things we need and want and use, like healthcare and education and housing, right? So it really bothers me when you say, here's this trend that's going down when we have to look at it. And the other thing is that it may be that we are spending less on defense. The government is spending less on defense, but the defense industry is making boatloads more money than they ever used to. And so that's why the GDP is going up, because they're making a lot more money and they're selling the stuff all around the world. We're the biggest arms manufacturers. So it's I'm not sure the percentage of GDP is the really relevant statistic to look at. And one last thing I would say is I think the drone strikes, I think that the administration knows that they, there wouldn't be politically acceptable to put troops in those places like Waziristan. But I really think that the drone strikes are to help perpetuate the war machine, because we know it's true that we are creating more enemies by every innocent person we kill. And I think the administration realizes that perfectly well. But they're creating more enemies, so we'll have more enemies to fight so we can keep the MIC rolling along. And so I would hope that you really push this as, the percentage of GDP is really not relevant. It's how we want our money spent, and it's not on the military. Thanks.
I certainly agree we don't want to spend our money on the military, but if you look at what's actually going on, they are being squeezed back painfully. They're still killing a lot of people, but they are actually being squeezed back. And that's a sign that we should double and triple our efforts and see that we actually, I see it as, look, I'm anti-Vietnam, I'm a Vietnam era anti-war activist. And that's the trend. We were at 8-9% of the GDP when we were fighting that one. And we're actually slowly, horribly, moving the ball slowly back. So I think we may disagree on this. I don't disagree on the need to get rid of all of it and spend it in a different way. But I think we also ought to see that historically they aren't winning all the battles, that we can squeeze them back and hopefully end them. So we'll have a more discussion.
Hi, my name is Roya and I live in Denver, Colorado, and I am very lucky to be here at this speech.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Also, my birthplace is Iran. I was born and raised over here. And you mentioned that we have to do the revolution here so that the rest of the world would follow. We have done quite a few revolutions. We changed our governments over there, but we have not been successful because the corporations, ExxonMobil, BPs, put another next dictators in our countries to run. And sometimes we are confused over there if the revolutions are done by the corporations or is done by the people. So I really agree with you that's why I am here at the belly of the beast. I want to do my fight over here to actually reduce the corporation, power, so they would not be allowed to choose another country's, regime for them. So thank you very much for mentioning that, it begins in America, and we will support you over here, and I hope you would support us over there, because we are the one who for many years the oil has been exploited over here, and people have been dying by various methods of environmental stuff that they have caused over there, but you never hear it over here. But now it's time. It's time we all work together and let this happen. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Don Wesher, and I'm from South Milwaukee, but I grew up with my grand folks who lived through the Depression, and I learned the value of thrift from them. Then I participated in the first Earth Day. I got a tape of Dr. Ehrlich's speech. It was so brilliant. He's compared human beings to putting bacteria in a bottle, both in finite environments, and the bacteria reproduce until they destroy themselves in their own waste. And that's the trouble with capitalism. Capitalism wants to produce more and more and more. And today, when I came to the conference, I broke my glasses on the way here. I walked all the way up and down State Street and around the square looking for another simple pair of reading glasses. And all I saw was a bunch of garbage and shit that is being sold in the shops here in the United States, here in Madison, the heart of liberalism. When are we going to turn our backs on this materialistic, consumerist culture and save the environment that supports us all? I saw a wonderful movie last week called Happy. I urge everybody to watch it if you haven't seen it, because it talks about what happy, trying to have a happy life, not a life filled with crap. We have the technology, the science, to make a good life for everybody on this planet. If we, and we don't, we could work 10, 15 hours a week and earn our basic necessities.
Yes,
the essence, the seeds are there for the transformation you talk about.
I agree entirely. But let me give you, let me give you an interesting number in that regard. The current economy measured the way it's measured, leaving that aside, it produces currently $200,000 for every family of four, if you broke up the economy, currently. This is a very rich economy. If you had an equal distribution, it would be $200,000 for every family of four. So that gives you some idea of how badly they're running the system. Sir.
Hi, my name is Steve Speakerman, and I'm from Waukesha. And what you describe in worker-owned companies, cooperatives, development of cooperatives, and land trusts, seems like a peaceful sort of transformation. Whereas I'm wondering if perhaps some of the pain from global warming or the blowback we're getting from overseas, the pain of unemployment, the pain and from all the decay that you describe is going to cause real physical violence and pain that will sort of make development of the peaceful transformation more difficult.
That's a really important question. That, I mean, what I was trying to sketch is that the elements of what you might begin to see a decentralized system that is democratizes ownership are beginning to emerge, and you can begin to put together a picture, maybe. And we, if we get time, we're going to do it tomorrow morning, actually, in one of our sessions. You can begin to see what it would look like. And there is an evolutionary process as well, and there's a consciousness process. That doesn't mean that all that together will automatically change. The possibility of building a politics, and there probably will be some violence. There's a huge struggle ahead. But what is interesting is that we're being forced in different parts of the economy to see new ways to go forward. And there's huge fight on that, and there is the question of violence, and we'll see how that plays out. And you know, some parts, we don't know the answer to that, as I said. But let me give you a term. You know, liberalism, I come out of liberalism in one part. I worked for Gaylord Nelson. The idea was let the corporations own it, and then you try to regulate them and tax them. And behind that was a politics based on labor unions who could support, elect guys like Gaylord. That's social democracy in Europe. That's the model. Let the corporations run it, but we'll keep them hedged in, we'll regulate them. That's the model. That system is the one that's in decay. And largely because labor's gone from 35% of the labor force to 11% and only 6% in the private, that whole system is declining. So the first response is that they get more power, and the second response is we get more pain. The third response is we begin to move and build out of that. But it's a different, that system is over. So either there's going to be a new system or it's going to just decay. Okay. It's after 9 p.m., we should stop. Leave time for a book signing, but there's going to be a book signing for anyone who wants. So maybe one or two more questions, and I guess we then have to stop. Please.
I have a phrase, and I think that it sums up the action part of what you, your message tonight, and it's, we are the people we are waiting for.
Good.
And I see a couple things that we can do peaceful transformation majorly, especially with all the people in this room. One is go home, find out if your state laws have state statutes that allow cooperations to be built and to be constructed, and if not, pass the laws in these other states. And you can use the state of Wisconsin's state statutes for co-ops as your model unless you want to do other research. I do know that co-ops, that the workers get paid more money usually, they have higher pay, they're treated better, so we can deal with the worker situation with this solution. And we can also, co-op ownership will survive a depression and a failure of economy. It is the only system I'm aware of at this point, and I have studied political economy through the university systems, that I'm aware of that will work in a depression and that will continue to flourish, and that the employers will continue to be able to be paid a sustainable wage. There is a co-op is the way to transform economically. Now, there's that doesn't necessarily address the environmental issues that we have. One suggestion I have for environmental improvement is that people band together in different types of groups like Sierra Club, like Willie Street Co-op has here in Madison, and buy solar for your homes at discounted rates. And this will, if we can do it in a large enough scale, it will pull away the money from the oil companies, the gas companies, and the nuclear power. And this is a way to start transforming the grid peacefully. Could you speak to that?
Thank you for your... One more.
Thanks. My name is Rashawn. I'm a graduate student at the University of Denver, and I've dropped out because I have too much student debt. And this is a very practical question I have for you. I don't know if I should treat my student debt as something that I should deal with conservatively because I'm going to have to pay that shit back, and it's going to like screw me if I take out too much, or if I should take out as much as possible because the system's going to collapse before I actually pay it back. I'm 26 years old. It's going to take me about like 25 years, 30 years to pay it back. In your semi-professional opinion, you know, no one really knows, but what do you think? Should I take out more loans with the hopes that it's not, that this isn't going to collapse before I have to pay it back?
I would be cautious. Good. Thank you very much. Sorry.
One second.
Yes. Oh, Gar, could I just make one short statement? I come from a very backward part of the country. I left when I was 17 because I couldn't stand it anymore. And recently I got some really good feedback because I've been working on my family and in-laws and everything over the years. And some of them got together and I asked them to listen to this song on YouTube. And it's the song is Democracy is Coming to the USA by Leonard Cohen. Please Google that.
And
if it doesn't bring a tear to your eye, and anyway, that's it.
Great. Thank you very much.
So let's give a big hand to Gar for his wonderful keynote tonight. And he has two fabulous books that are outside, America Beyond Capitalism, What Then Must We Do? And he will be willing to sign books out there. So please go outside, buy a book, talk more. And if you want to come to a social hang around and talk more tonight at a local bar, it's called Brokaw. A lot of us will be going there, 7 West Main Street, just across the square. And finally, there is a woman who came up to me and said, please mention another movement that wasn't mentioned tonight that a number of you are working on, and that is Move to Amend, trying to change the Constitution that says corporations are not people. So please give a hand to the people working on that issue. So thank you all very much for coming tonight. 9 o'clock in the morning we start. See you at the social hour tonight and tomorrow morning. And one of the things that it shows whether you're a really good activist, or what do you call them, Gar, political actor, is historical actor is if you can party hard and then get up early in the morning and work hard.